Tonight we're continuing our study of God's judgment of the house of Eli, which is a study that shows to us another example or demonstration of God's judgment of the wicked. It's also a very good example of how God proclaims or declares what is going to happen. And he is the only one that can declare what is going to happen in the future and then bring it to pass. And will do so, as he says, fully in accordance with whatever his word is. And the Lord had foretold his judgment of the house of Eli and was very clear that it was going to be something that would take place over a long period of time by human reckoning, but not by his, of course, such that God even gave a sign that was going to take place early, as an early portion of his judgment of the house of Eli, that would be the sign and the proof that everything else that he said would follow would indeed come to pass in time. Although it took the course of about 100 years or more, somewhere in that neighborhood at least, for all of that to be fulfilled, the judgment of the house of Eli. And this is also an important part of the proof of this being God's word. We know that God has told us that his bearing witness by signs, wonders, and miracles, those miracles that were done in the time in which he was revealing his word, is the confirmation, the proof that the ones he was inspiring with his word that performed those miracles, that God was the one speaking through them, every word of it. We also know from what he teaches in his word, when we find those prophets speaking of what is to come, and when that comes to pass fully, that is a part of that evidence and proof that it was God's word that was spoken and not man's, because only God can do this. So this is part of God's work in proving his inspiration of these scriptures that we're reading. So this will build our faith in that, as we also see this example of God's judgment of wickedness and how God works in all of these situations and is involved in every situation according to what his plans and purposes are to bring all of that to pass. So we can learn a lot of different lessons from this study of the judgment of the house of Eli. And what we've seen up to this point was we started by looking at the covenant that God made with Levi himself, the son of Jacob, who was the father of the tribe of Levi, who had a great fear of the Lord and a love for righteousness and hatred of iniquity. And he turned many away from iniquity. And then God made a covenant that he was going to, that his descendants would be the priests in the nation of Israel. And so all of those who, beginning with Aaron, the first high priest of Israel, as God designated that only the descendants of Aaron of the house of Levi would be the priests, the rest of the tribe, the rest of the Levites, would support the priests in their work for the Lord. But all of the ones that occupied the office of priest, high priest, and the rest of the priests in Israel, their job was to follow that fear of the Lord, the faith and goodness that was in their father Levi, which sadly we see they failed to do so many times in Israel's history. And the house of Eli failed in that also. And so we also saw here in our study the cause of the destruction of the house of Eli. And it was particularly because Eli, the high priest, though he is not accused by God in the scriptures of being guilty of the wickedness and immorality that his two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, were engaged in. And we looked at the details of that in 1 Samuel chapter 2. Nevertheless, Eli, their father and the high priest, who did rebuke them for that wickedness, but he did not carry forth what God's sentence was on ones that did the wickedness that they did, and they were not punished, they were not removed from being priest And by God's judgment, they should have been cut off from Israel. But Eli did not take any action, and by that refusal to do so, God said he was honoring his sons above the Lord. And so that was the reason why God foretold the destruction of the house of Eli and said there was not going to be an old man in his house in the future, and that he was going to utterly destroy his house. He was going to then give the priesthood to a different family that was going to be faithful to him. So it would not be of Eli's house. It was going to be given to another. Now, again, this was going to be a judgment that would be revealed and unveiled over time. And we saw the beginning of that as God gave the sign through the prophet in 1 Samuel chapter 2, verses 12 through 25. We're not going to read that over again tonight, but within those verses that we've read before, with that prophecy of the destruction of the house of Eli that God promised, he also said, actually down all the way through verse 36 of chapter 2, so it's most of 1 Samuel 2, but the Lord had said he was going to cause Eli's two sons, Hophni and Phinehas, to both die in one day. And that would be the sign to everyone in Israel that what God was saying about this coming judgment of the house of Eli, it would all come to pass. And so then last week, we read about the beginning of this fall of the house of Eli, starting with the death of Hophni, the deaths of Hophni and Phinehas. When the Philistines had come against Israel, and because of the wickedness of Israel during this time, and Samuel the prophet had just started his work as being a prophet of the Lord as a boy in 1 Samuel chapter 3, and it's in the next chapter, 1 Samuel 4, where Hophni and Phinehas were called to bring the Ark of the Covenant out of Shiloh to the camp of Israel after they had suffered defeat at the hands of the Philistines. The reason they were defeated is because that's what God promised would happen to the Israelites if they were not keeping his commandments, and they weren't. And so they lost that battle to the Philistines. And so then the Israelites in the camp said it was because they didn't have the Ark of God with them. And if they brought that into their camp, that ark, that object, that gold box, was going to save them or deliver them from their enemies. And so Hophni and Phinehas brought the Ark of the Covenant into the camp. And we know what happened on that day that we were studying about last week in 1 Samuel chapter 4. The Philistines defeated Israel again, and there were 30,000 of the soldiers of Israel that fell on that day. Hophni and Phinehas were both killed in one day, like God said they would. The Ark of the Covenant was taken by the Philistines, and they took it back to their land. And then a messenger came to Shiloh and delivered that news to Eli, who was sitting in a chair. A big, heavy man at the age of 98 fell backwards out of his chair, broke his neck, and died. So Hophni and Phinehas, his sons, died, and then the high priest himself died. And then Phinehas, his son's wife, who was, she was great with a child at that time, and so she went into labor with what happened and with that news, and with her husband dying, her father-in-law dying, she went into labor and died in childbirth. But before she died, when the child was born, which was a son, she had him named Ichabod, which means glory departed. God's glory had departed from Israel with the Ark of the Covenant being taken. Of course, God wasn't with Israel in that time because of their wickedness. So that's where we left off in our study last time. And so that was one of the most tragic days in the history of Israel in 1 Samuel 4 with all those things that happened on that day. So we already see God's judgment of the house of Eli beginning in that chapter. So we read there about Phinehas's son Ichabod. Well, it turns out Phinehas, the son of Eli, had another son. And when we turn to 1 Samuel chapter 14 and verse 3, 1 Samuel 14 and verse 3, it says, "And Ahiah, the son of Ahitub, Ichabod's brother, the son of Phinehas, the son of Eli, the Lord's priest in Shiloh, wearing an ephod, and the people knew not that Jonathan was gone." Well, this is when after Saul has become king, and the Lord is telling who the priest was at this time. Now, why does the Lord so meticulously give the lineage of this particular priest in Saul's days? Well, of course, it's connecting it back to Eli. It tells us this is still the high priest is still of the house of Eli, and we can see the exact connection to Eli himself. Eli, through his son Phinehas. Phinehas had, we know, at least two sons, the one that was born in 1 Samuel 4, and when that his mother died delivering, that was Ichabod. But he had a brother named Ahitub. And Ahitub had a son, Ahiah. Well, so we had Ahitub and Ichabod. We would presume more than likely that that Ahitub was an older brother of Ichabod, considering that, well, it would have to be because Ichabod's mother died in delivery in 1 Samuel 4, and of course Phinehas himself died that very same day. So they had had a son before Ichabod that was named Ahitub. Well, that Ahitub had a son named Ahiah, was the high priest here during this the earlier part of the reign of King Saul. Now, this Ahitub, when we read a little bit later, and this is where we're going to go next in our study, we don't have details of what happened to Ichabod, what happened to his older brother Ahitub, what happened to Ahiah ultimately. Well, we can know just by what the Lord said he was going to do with the house of Eli. They died. And did they die in a ripe old age? Well, we would know that they didn't, because God said that none of those of the house of Eli were going to be an old man in that position. So one way or another, without knowing the details of how they died in the flower of their age, as God put it in the prophecy in 1 Samuel 2, we know that that was fulfilled, that God fulfilled his promise and his prophecy. So however they died, they died. But that brings us down to Ahiah's son, which in 1 Samuel chapter 21, we read about Ahiah's son, who is now the high priest later in Saul's reign. Saul reigned for 40 years, and so we know his reign was divided between Ahiah and Ahimelech, Ahiah's son, being high priest up to this point in 1 Samuel chapter 21. And there's still quite a few years left in Saul's reign. That right there tells you that there was a lot of changeover in the high priesthood, as we would expect with them not. I mean, Eli was 98. We don't see any more of his descendants living to be an age like that in that position. So they were dying much younger by God's judgment. But the next high priest during Saul's reign that we read about is the son of Ahiah, whose name was Ahimelech. I mean, it tells us plainly in 1 Samuel chapter 22 and in verse 9 that Doeg the Edomite said that he saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob to Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub. So that lets us know plainly Ahimelech is Ahitub's son, and we know that Ahitub was Ichabod's brother. So actually the high priesthood passed from Ahijah to the brother of Ahijah, which was Ahimelech. I mistakenly said that Ahimelech was the son of Ahijah. I mean, there are too many that sound alike, because you have Ahitub and Ahijah and then Ahimelech. So, and then we got Abiathar. So there's a lot of these ones with start with an A in a row here. But if we can try to keep it straight, I'll try. But anyway, if we can keep that straight, it's showing us who these people are. But these are all still priests of the house of Eli. The priesthood has not been, the house of Eli has not been fully destroyed, although that's what's coming in 1 Samuel chapter 21. But Ahimelech was the son of Ahitub, brother of Ahijah. So again, that shows us how, I mean, Ahijah, he died early enough that his brother becomes the next high priest. And then it's Ahimelech's son, Abiathar, that is going to be the one, the sole survivor of the massacre in the city of Nob in 1 Samuel 21. 1 Samuel chapter 22, verse 20 tells us that Abiathar was the son of Ahimelech. So that gives us the exact lineage all the way from Eli to Abiathar. And Abiathar is going to be the last of the house of Eli to serve in the priesthood. And he was with David throughout his reign. And then he was removed from the priesthood by Solomon because, that's our intention to get to that to read tonight. But Abiathar did wrong in supporting a rebellion by Solomon's brother Adonijah in trying to become king instead of Solomon, when God had, and David himself, as per God's expressed will, David had designated Solomon to be his successor on the throne of Israel. That was God's choice. And so any attempt to do otherwise, of course, was rebellion against God himself. And Abiathar went along with Adonijah in that. So Solomon removed him from the priesthood, and that's the end. That's the last of the house of Eli and the end of the priesthood being in that family. And that's when Zadok was made high priest. Zadok being of an entirely separate family in Israel. So let's look at 1 Samuel chapter 21. And this is the day where we find more of the judgment of the house of Eli than at any one time. I mean, first, what happened in 1 Samuel 4 was bad enough as far as looking at what happened. That was quite a tragic day for Israel as a whole, but of course for Eli and his family. Eli died, his two sons died, his daughter-in-law died in childbirth all on that day. But in 1 Samuel 21, we're going to see at Saul's commandment the utter slaughter of all these priests in Nob for the sole reason that Ahimelech, the high priest, gave some assistance to David, who was fleeing for his life from King Saul. So Saul made an example out of Nob by having all of the Lord's priests there killed. Well, these are all of the house of Eli. So Eli's house is going to have only one survivor after this day. So the rest of it's wiped out here in 1 Samuel 21 for Saul to make an example of, so that no other village or town or anybody in Israel would be willing to show any assistance to David whatsoever without endangering themselves. I mean, they would just ask, if Saul would slaughter a city of the Lord's priests for giving showbread to David and his men and the sword of Goliath, what would he do to any other city in Israel that harbored or assisted, helped David in any way? They all knew what that was, and they quit helping him after that. Nobody would. So that was that objective of Saul's was accomplished in that sense. But it didn't help Saul in the long run for his ultimate objective to have David killed, because God was protecting David and delivering him from that. But that would not be the case for the city of Nob. They were going to fall by the sword. So in 1 Samuel chapter 21, so this is going to really be a look at the two chapters in 1 Samuel that tells us about all of this, what happened. But 1 Samuel chapter 21, it begins in verse 1, "Then came David to Nob to Ahimelech the priest. And Ahimelech was afraid at the meeting of David and said unto him, Why art thou alone and no man with thee? And David said unto Ahimelech the priest, The king hath commanded me a business, and hath said unto me, Let no man know anything of the business whereabout I send thee, and what I have commanded thee, and what I have appointed my servants to such and such a place." Now, most people in Israel at this point, if they heard those words, who would they assume that that was in reference to? Who would the king, who did most people still regard to be the king? Well, Saul. He still possesses the reins of power. But in God's sight, does God recognize Saul still as being the king of Israel? No. He took his spirit from him. He rejected Saul back in 1 Samuel 15 when Saul didn't obey the Lord's commandment regarding the destruction of the Amalekites. God said this day, through Samuel the prophet, he said, this day the Lord has rejected you from being king. And then it's in the very next chapter, 1 Samuel 16, when God has Samuel to anoint David to be king of Israel. In God's sight, from that time forward, he removed his spirit from Saul and gave that to David. So in God's sight, David was now the king of Israel. David understood that that was the case. So when David is saying to Ahimelech, the king has sent me on this business, who's David referring to? He's not referring to Saul there. He's referring to himself. I mean, could David say that, yeah, I'm here because the king sent me, he being the king? Well, that's exactly what he's saying. And it was 100% true. There's no lie here at all. The one that was not following what God said, of course, chiefly was King Saul. He was no longer recognized as king by the Lord. So David is indeed on the king's business because he's now the king in God's sight. And so in verse 3, David said to Ahimelech, "Now therefore, what is under thine hand? Give me 5 loaves of bread in mine hand, or what there is present." And the priest answered David and said, "There is no common bread under my hand, but there is hallowed bread, if the young men have kept themselves at least from women." And David answered the priest and said unto him, "Of a truth, women have been kept from us about these 3 days whence I came out, and the vessels of the young men are holy, and the bread is in a manner common, yea, though it were sanctified this day in the vessel." So the priest gave him hallowed bread, for there was no bread there but the show bread that was taken from before the Lord to put hot bread in the day when it was taken away. Now a certain man of the servants of Saul was there that day, detained before the Lord, and his name was Doeg, an Edomite, the chiefest of the herdmen that belonged to Saul. Now that is an important notation in that verse. Here's this Doeg, not an Israelite, but an Edomite, who witnesses David coming there before Ahimelech. And this is going to end up causing the destruction of all of these priests in Nob where David came that day. So in verse 8 it says, "And David said unto Ahimelech, And is there not here under thine hand spear or sword? For I have neither brought any sword nor my weapons with me, because the king's business required haste." And that was true. He was running for his life. Verse 9, "And the priest said, The sword of Goliath, the Philistine, whom thou slewest in the valley of Elah, behold, it is here wrapped in a cloth behind the ephod. If thou wilt take it, for there is no other save that here. And David said, There is none like that. Give it me. And David arose and fled that day for fear of Saul, and went to Achish, the king of Gath." All right, so that's the end of that day as far as what David was doing. And then he departed from the land of Israel and went to seek refuge there in the land of the Philistines. And we won't look at what happened there, as, of course, the Philistines didn't roll out the red carpet for David, and he ended up having to play the like a crazy man until he was sent out and he left there. But anyway, that was the end of David's part on that day in Nob. But in chapter 22, starting in verse 6, 1 Samuel 22, verse 6, it says, "When Saul heard that David was discovered and the men that were with him, now Saul abode in Gibeah under a tree in Ramah, having his spear in his hand, and all his servants were standing about him. Then Saul said unto his servants that stood about him, Hear now, you Benjamites, will the son of Jesse give every one of you fields and vineyards and make you all captains of thousands and captains of hundreds?" Well, that's the beginning of what he's saying here. How does he refer to all of his servants here? You Benjamites. What tribe is David from? Judah. What tribe is Saul from? He's, of course, Benjamite. So these are his... how many of Saul's chief men and servants were of his own family and own tribe? Well, virtually all of them. So he's appealing to them on that family and tribal basis. You want to help this guy? He's from Judah. Is he going to give you all these fields and give you all of this reward and like your fellow Benjamite and family member like I have? If you back him, he's not gonna be as good to you as I am. I mean, that's the point he's trying to make there. He's appealing to them on that basis. And then he continues in verse 8, having made that argument, he says in verse 8, "That all of you have conspired against me, and there is none that showeth me that my son hath made a league with the son of Jesse, and there is none of you that is sorry for me, or showeth unto me that my son hath stirred up my servant against me to lie in wait as at this day." How many lies are in that verse? It's a little hard to count because they just start piling on top of each other. But that's all falsehood. There was no treachery in David. There was no rebellion against Saul by David. Who was a more faithful servant to Saul than David? There had been no rebellion there at all. Saul was doing wickedly, and when his son, Jonathan, is forced to choose between supporting his father in his wickedness in pursuit of and trying to destroy a righteous man like David, Jonathan is either going to support the evil that his father's doing, or he's going to be on the side of righteousness, and in which case he's going to be if he's on the Lord's side, he's on David's side, and he chose the Lord. So that's the choice that Jonathan made. But did Jonathan do any evil to his father Saul? Of course not. So there was no evil done there by any of those. There's no conspiracy here on the part of these servants of Saul in trying to help this so-called rebellion by Jonathan and David. So all of this is just all lies. But verse 9, it says, "Then answered Doeg the Edomite, which was set over the servants of Saul, and said, I saw the son of Jesse coming to Nob to Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub. And he inquired of the Lord for him, and gave him victuals, and gave him the sword of Goliath the Philistine. Then the king sent to call Ahimelech the priest, the son of Ahitub, and all his father's house, the priests that were in Nob, and they all came, and they came all of them to the king." Now, which family is this? Because it says here this all of his father's house, all of Ahimelech's father's house. What house is Ahimelech of? The house of Eli. So this is plainly showing that all of these priests here in Nob, this is all the house of Eli. That's remaining, they all came. They came all of them to the king in verse 11. And Saul said, "Hear now, thou son of Ahitub." And he answered, "Here I am, my lord." And Saul said unto him, "Why have you conspired against me, thou and the son of Jesse, in that thou hast given him bread and a sword, and has inquired of God for him that he should rise against me to lie in wait as at this day?" Well, the first part was true, that Ahimelech had given him the bread and the sword, but not that part about to help him to rise against Saul, to lie in wait as this day, that's more of the falsehood that he's telling. Well, if Saul tells the truth here, why are you helping my most righteous servant that has done nothing against me, and why aren't you helping me to kill this righteous man? I mean, how does that sound? The truth doesn't sound very good here, does it? Because Saul's being fully wicked. So how does he make himself sound like he's doing right? How does he justify himself? Well, by falsely accusing David and telling these lies that David is conspiring against him, that David is lying in wait, and that Jonathan's in the conspiracy, and now Ahimelech and these priests too. So this is all Saul's lies. Verse 14, it says, "Then Ahimelech answered the king and said, 'And who is so faithful among all thy servants as David, which is the king's son-in-law, and goeth at thy bidding and is honorable in thine house?'" He answers with the exact truth to Saul. I mean, it completely contradicts Saul's falsehood there. In verse 15, he says, Did I then begin to inquire of God for him? Be it far from me. Let not the king impute anything unto his servant, nor to all the house of my father, for thy servant knew nothing of all this, less or more." So it was true that he gave the bread and the sword to him, but did he inquire of the Lord for David as part of what Saul is telling here is this so-called conspiracy? And no, that part wasn't true. And especially what was underlying that accusation, that there's some treachery or rebellion going on there. Verse 16, does Saul say, "Okay, yeah, you're right"? No. Verse 16, the king said, "Thou shalt surely die, Ahimelech, them and all thy father's house." So here he's pronouncing a death sentence on all of the family. This is all of the rest of the house of Eli. And verse 17, and the king said unto the footman that stood about him, "Turn and slay the priests of the Lord, because their hand also is with David, and because they knew when he fled and did not show it to me." But the servants of the king would not put forth their hand to fall upon the priests of the Lord. None of these Israelite servants of Saul were willing to kill all of these priests in Nob, the Lord's priests. Did they know that those priests had done nothing, that they were guilty of no wickedness? And I mean, for them to lift up their hand against the Lord's priest, they were not willing to do it. They were afraid to do that. They knew that was wrong. That was a line they were not willing to cross in support of Saul. Who was the only one that was willing to do this wicked deed and kill all these priests of the Lord? Not an Israelite. This Edomite, Doeg, the one who saw David in Nob, he's the one that ends up doing this. And so they wouldn't put forth their hand. Verse 18, the king said to Doeg, "Turn thou and fall upon the priest." And Doeg the Edomite turned, and he fell upon the priest and slew on that day 85 persons that did wear a linen ephod. That's 85 priests. So 85 priests, these all of the house of Eli, Doeg the Edomite put to death that day. Verse 19, and Nob, the city of the priests, smote he with the edge of the sword, both man and woman, children and sucklings, and oxen and asses and sheep, with the edge of the sword. And one of the sons of Ahimelech, the son of Ahitub, named Abiathar, escaped and fled after David. And Abiathar showed David that Saul had slain the Lord's priests. And David said unto Abiathar, "I knew it that day when Doeg the Edomite was there that he would surely tell Saul, 'I have occasioned the death of all the persons of thy father's house. Abide thou with me, fear not, for he that seeketh my life seeketh thy life, but with me thou shalt be in safeguard.'" So he took Abiathar in. He's the last one. And Abiathar is going to be with David for the remainder of David's reign. And that's when he's going to engage in that in support of the rebellion of Adonijah against Solomon, which is there's some irony there, because look at the accusation that Saul was leveling against Abiathar's father, Ahimelech, and the rest of his family on that day, accusing them of supporting David in a rebellion against the king, which wasn't the case. Well, Abiathar ends up supporting a rebellion against the king Solomon, and that's what occasions his removal as high priest. So it's kind of interesting how what ended up happening there. I mean, you would think that one thing Abiathar would steer clear of would be involving himself in anything like that, but sad that we read that that's what he did. But Abiathar's the only one left. So this chapter shows us this judgment of the house of Eli. Now, from David's perspective, he feels some guilt or responsibility because he went there, Doeg saw it, and he says, I've occasioned the death of all your father's house. In actuality, who had occasioned the death of all those people there? It wasn't David. Actually, it was Hophni and Phinehas and then Eli by not taking the action against his wicked sons. That's what occasioned that prophecy from the Lord of the destruction of Eli's house. And that's what we see happen here. So this is God's judgment. But do you see how God was working in these situations involving Saul and David and all of that? But at the same time, tying it in to his judgment of the house of Eli, what he had said so many years before in those prophecies, and how God was working in all of this. He's working in all of this to save David. He's working in all of this to cause David to grow through these sufferings. And he's also bringing about this judgment that he had pronounced long before on the house of Eli. So it is quite interesting to see God's work again and how he's working in so many different situations that are related and at the same time. Of course, God is able to do that's what he does, and that's what he does on a daily basis. So that's the end of the house of Eli, except for Abiathar. Now, as we look at the beginning of 1 Kings, we'll see what happens ultimately to Abiathar and why he is removed as high priest. 1 Kings chapter 1, 1 Kings chapter 1, verses 5 through 8, says, Then Adonijah the son of Haggith exalted himself. Now that is, the Lord says it exactly what's behind this. And what happens to everyone that exalts himself? He gets abased. So just without reading anything else, we're already going to know what's going to ultimately happen to Adonijah from the description of whatever he's going to do here. He tells why, and that guarantees the outcome. There's going to be an abasement after whatever he's doing when he exalts himself. But it says, Then Adonijah, the son of Haggith, exalted himself, saying, I will be king. Oh, no, you won't. He was saying he would, and that was his intention. But that's what he's gonna do, take his actions to try to make that happen. But when he's saying that, who is he fighting against? Adonijah is squarely putting himself in opposition to the Lord and fighting against God and what God's will is. Is it going to succeed or fail? Well, what had Saul done? That's exactly what Saul was doing when God had chosen David to be king. And Saul was determined to hold that power for himself and for his successors. Did he succeed? He failed. What happened to Adonijah's brother Absalom when he had tried this in David's time? He failed. But here he's going to try anyway. So he exalted himself, saying, I will be king. And he prepared him chariots and horsemen and 50 men to run before him. Well, Absalom had done a lot of preparation work before he took his action too, didn't he? But one can plan and prepare and do everything. It looks like everything right to have it all set up nicely to get what you want. But if it was not God's will, and it wasn't, then what's going to happen? All those plans and all that preparation is going to fail. He prepared these chariots and horsemen, 50 men to run before him. And his father had not displeased him at any time in saying, "Why hast thou done so?" And he also was a very goodly man. And his mother bare him after Absalom. So he's going to follow Absalom. Verse 7, "And he conferred with Joab, the son of Zeruiah, and with Abiathar the priest, and they, following Adonijah, helped him." Well, if Abiathar is involved in something, and the one that he's allied with, and that is Joab, it wasn't too long ago that we had a study about him, wasn't it? Or at least partly about him, of God's judgment of the wicked. He's definitely on the wrong side here. Does Abiathar not know what God had said about who was going to be king next? And David had been very clear about that. And that's why you don't see any of the other ones, the righteous ones, following in this. Why did Abiathar join in to help Adonijah on the side of Joab? This was a very foolish thing for him to do. Verse 8 says, "But Zadok the priest, and Benaiah the son of Jehoiada, and Nathan the prophet, and Shemaiah, and Rei, and the mighty men which belonged to David were not with Adonijah." Now, shouldn't that have been obvious then to Abiathar that he's on the wrong side here? Look who's on the other side. Well, he knows what God said, which is all he needed to know, and that's all the other ones needed to know, and that's why they were on Solomon's side, not Adonijah's. But notice who he highlights at the beginning of verse 8. Who is on the right side as far as the priest is concerned? Zadok, who's not of the house of Eli, and he's going to be the next high priest. And so this is going to be the transition from the house of Eli to the house of Zadok. And early in our study, you may recall when we went through and looked at, traced the line of Aaron through his sons. Well, he had Nadab and Abihu who were killed without having any descendants because of their offering strange fire before the Lord in Leviticus chapter 10. That left his other two sons that he had, and all of the other descendants of Aaron were through either Eleazar or Ithamar. Those were his two remaining sons. Now, as we saw, we traced through, and we learned that Eli was a descendant of Ithamar, whereas Zadok was a descendant of Eleazar, Aaron's son. So it's a change in families, but it also is a change from an entirely different descendant son of Aaron from the other. So it's from really Ithamar's line back to Eleazar's line, where we know it started in the beginning. We don't know at what point it transitioned from the descendants from Eleazar through Phinehas over to Ithamar's descendants, which included Eli and his house. But now it's going back from transitioning from Abiathar to Zadok the priest. In verses 26 and 27, 1 Kings chapter 2, verses 26 and 27, it says, "And unto Abiathar the priest said the king, Get thee to Anathoth unto thine own fields, for thou art worthy of death, but I will not at this time put thee to death, because thou bearest the ark of the Lord God before David my father, and because thou hast been afflicted in all wherein my father was afflicted." So Solomon thrust out Abiathar from being priest unto the Lord, that he might fulfill the word of the Lord which he spake concerning the house of Eli in Shiloh. The Lord makes it very clear here, this was the final fulfillment of all that God had said, going back to what we had read in 1 Samuel 2. This was the culmination of his judgment of the house of Eli, the removal of the final priest of his line, Abiathar. Solomon removed him. He was not killed, though he was worthy of it. Solomon showed him mercy because he had been with his father David faithfully throughout his reign. And so he showed him mercy on that basis. But that's the end of the line of Eli as priest of the Lord. And so now Zadok became priest. And we read for the rest of the Old Testament that's recorded, it's descendants of Zadok and of his house that remained the priests of the Lord. No more of the house of Eli. He became that high priest. So that's the end of what we have for the judgment of the house of Eli. We do hope that going through this study can remind us of the Lord's judgment of the wicked, also remind us of how the Lord keeps all of his promises faithfully, and how he has the power to work in all things and does so after the counsel of his will. He doesn't forget anything, and he brings all to pass that he has declared. And at the same time, by doing this, he's given the proof that this is his word and not the word of man. So we have a lot from that judgment of the house of Eli to teach and encourage us in our seeking God and following righteousness. If you're here this evening and not yet a child of God, this is an opportunity for you to come forward tonight and obey his gospel, to repent and be baptized in the name of Jesus Christ for the remission of your sins. Or if you are a member of the Lord's body, if you have gone astray from the Lord, if you need to return to him this evening, we're encouraging you to do that. Anyone that needs to come now, please come forward now while we stand together and sing.